KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. The Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow starting at 5:30 in the studio to look at some of the items there on the agenda. I have planners Francisco Astorga and Anya Gron. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So let's start with you, Francisco. You're the new planner on the Alice Claim development since Christy Alexander moved to town. So you're basically caught up on that, huh?
Trying to get caught up. Bruce Erickson has been providing some of that transition on that, but now I've been assigned to work on it. So, yes.
Yeah. So now what's your role in this now that City Council has kind of put it back into the Planning Commission's hands?
Well, it's to simply wrap up and finish processing the plat amendments and subdivision that the Planning Commission forwarded a negative recommendation back in August. So we still have to take that back to City Council officially. The meeting that we had last week was only a work session for City Council to provide input regarding a different plan that the applicant submitted back in September 30th. But now we just go back and wrap up that application as we have a responsibility to provide an actual action on that.
Yeah, but they've come back, the applicants come back with like what's called the gully plan.
That is correct.
So have you done the analysis on all that?
The gully plan was very familiar to the 2009 site plan B. We're still trying to wait and have the applicants decide whether they want to push forward with the gully plan or if they're going to wrap up with the former proposal, the one that the Planning Commission reviewed. Oh. So... that's pretty much it on that.
All right. In terms of tomorrow night's meeting, there's some land management code amendments. Sometimes they can be passed quickly. Other times, a lot of discussion. We're talking about things to do with the vertical zoning.
Yeah, that is correct. As we were able to identify in the general plan, it did say that we needed to go back and take a look at that to see if we could strengthen that. So senior planner Kirsten Whetstone is working on that, where we are taking some of those residential uses, going back to the Planning Commission and make them and truly make them not allowed on a storefront component based on a specific regulation from how it's seen or how it is accessed off a public right-of-way. So it is a work session that we're going to have with the Planning Commission. So we're trying to clean that up.
Okay. I guess what we've done is exempt Lower Main Street then from those requirements?
That is correct. And at one point, the planning department was considering adding Lower Main Street for that. And after having many discussions with property owners, business owners, the Planning Commission, and even the Historic Park City Alliance, we've determined that we're not going to do that this round, that we should go back in 3 to 5 years and revisit that, because most of that, all of it, has already been built. So uses are already established. We are saying that we want to go back in 3 to 5 years and revisit vertical zoning, how it relates to storefronts in that part of town.
Okay, and then there's also the land management code amendments with regard to nightly rentals and the historic residential low density zone. These are going to be not allowed. Is that the idea?
That is the idea. It is in the HRL, the low density district. However, we are limiting this amendment to what we're calling the east side. The HRL is two districts. One is known as the McHenry neighborhood, while the other one is King Avenue, Sampson, Upper Norfolk. Because of the proximity with the Park City Mountain Resort, we're only looking at prohibiting nightly rentals on the McHenry side. That would be we're calling it the HRL east side.
Okay. Let's see, Anya, the land management code also is going to be discussed with regard, you'll have a public hearing with regard to expanding the historic sites inventory?
True. So currently we have landmark and significant buildings, and we're looking at adding a third category, which would be contributing buildings. As you know, the ordinance adjusted or modified the definition for significant, and so significant buildings are now 50 years old. They also may have received grant money in the past, and they contain historic materials. These contributing buildings would be 40 years old, which helps us create kind of an inventory of them for future references. But the contributory also has to deal with more the look and feel of the streetscape, and these contributory buildings contribute to that look and feel.
All right. So what does it mean then to be on the historic sites inventory?
So if you're on the historic sites inventory, typically you're protected from demolition. If your landmark is significant, you're definitely protected from demolition. If the building is in such bad condition that it can't be saved, we allow panelization and reconstruction because that's also a form of preservation. At this third category, contributory, we're looking at making that more of a voluntary designation. So if you're contributory, you would be eligible for grant funds. However, you would not necessarily be protected from demolition unless you received a grant from the city. So it's more of a voluntary designation in a way.
All right. So if you take money, though, it's...
Yep, then you're saved. You got to maintain what you have.
Okay. All right. Well, can we talk about some of those buildings? I mean, I had sent you an email early this morning. I'm not sure if you had gotten it. But the Star Hotel has recently been condemned by the chief building official. So is this an historic building?
It is. It is designated as significant on our historic site inventory. I know you'd asked if it was National Register eligible, and it's not, just because of the amount of alterations that have occurred on it. The building used to have more of a Spanish colonial look. Some of that is still reminiscent in the design that exists today, but if you saw historic photographs, there's been a lot of modifications to the facade.
Yeah. So what does it mean then? I mean, because it's basically condemned, like we have the Centennial across the street, also condemned. I mean, but nothing's happened to it.
Right. And so we will be working with the owner to develop a preservation plan for the building and determine what the best way of maintaining it is. I mean, obviously, if you can make the structural upgrades that the building requires and keeping the building intact, that's always the optimal goal. We understand, though, at times, you know, the deterioration is beyond that. And so we may have to look at panelization or even reconstruction due to how deteriorated that structure is.
Is the property owner interested in doing, fixing it up, or is it, you know, a case of demolition by neglect?
I don't know that I would call it a case of demolition by neglect necessarily, because I know this owner has only owned it for a short while. And I think, you know, it's an older building and it's a very large building to maintain. I'm not the planner on the project, so I'm not sure how... what his goals are, but he will be required, if he decides to demolish it, he'll be required to reconstruct it.
All right. So that's what we're waiting for then, is the preservation plan?
Right. So we'll meet with them, and the planning and building departments will work closely to make sure that the best preservation solution is chosen so we maintain that building.
All right. You've also recently gone through the work of protecting historic mining sites. Where are we with that?
So we've been working with Vail to... They, as part of their conditions of approval on their conditional use permit, they had to invest $50,000, and we're continuing to work with them to determine what the best use of those funds are. And I think they're hoping to pursue some stabilization work on the California Comstock.
Is that the top priority?
It is. It has been for a while. Just because, even though it's outside of the city limits, City Council felt that this was a very important structure and that, you know, it should be a prioritization.
Yeah. So how many sites have you actually identified?
We've got about a dozen or so sites, and some of the sites contain multiple buildings, and I mean, there's a few different things going on there.
All right. And any update with regard to the Daly West mine area?
Not right now. I believe it got moved. The headframe got moved back off the ski run and onto, JSSD's property. And that was part of their agreement, with Deer Valley, was that they would make room for the ski season. And so we're continuing to work with them to determine the best stabilization options for that structure as well.
Okay, and this is neither of your projects, but can you tell us anything about the Parkite, the
yeah,
new condominium, and mall development there? A few plat amendments within that.
Yeah, this is an amendment to the record of survey to simply amend an area that was previously identified as convertible commercial space. So it gave that specific property owner the ability to lease that area for commercial retail purposes. Now they're converting a portion of that area into two commercial units. So now they also have the ability to lease them, but they have the opportunity to sell those units individually. Nothing else is changing other than that.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to mention?
No, that's about it. Yeah. Thank
right.
you so much.
Anya and Francisco, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, the Summit County Council is meeting at the Summit County Courthouse starting tomorrow at 10 a.m. In the studio with details, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Yes, we have a long meeting tomorrow.
A long meeting, yeah. Well, let's start with that. The Forest Supervisor Roundtable discussion. Again, that's starting at 10, from 10 to noon. Actually, you'll be in Salt Lake for that?
Yes, we will. I mean, our three of the council folks will be there, and that's why we noticed that. It's just an update with the forest supervisors in order to just improve or continue good relations.
Okay. I mean, are we talking about the proposed wilderness plan?
I'm sure those topics will come up. It's just kind of a review of what they're working on and how that relates to issues that are present with the council in Summit County.
All right. The entire council then will be back in Colville at 3:25 meeting as the Board of Equalization. A settlement over the tax valuation for a parcel of about 10 acres there in the Canyons area. Where is this? I mean, who owns it? It mentions Talisker Canyons PropCo, but also Wolf Mountain Resorts.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure the exact placement of the property within the canyons. But, you know, it looks like it was assessed as commercial for quite a long time as it was unbuilt. So it was just agreed upon in settlement that it should have been assessed differently, which then drives its property taxes.
All right, because for years it had a valuation of more than $7.9 million. Now under the settlement, we're dropping it down to anywhere from 7.1 to 4.3?
Yeah, it will drop down. I don't have the complete details on that. The assessor has the detail on that. So, but the council will be considering that as in their role as the Board of Equalization.
All right. Then also a discussion regarding centrally assessed properties. This is with the Deputy Director of the Utah State Tax Commission. First, can you tell us what centrally assessed properties are?
A little bit. Centrally assessed properties are those types of operations that cross over county lines, or they have to do with some type of utility or some type of extraction of natural resources. So those generally are the categories of centrally assessed.
So do we have a number of those properties in Summit County?
We do, mostly in the natural resources and pipelines. Pipelines also fall into centrally assessed. We do have some oil and gas activity within the county as well. So those all fall within that category. The reason this is coming up, in the last couple of years, the legislature has been dealing with some efforts to change the way centrally assessed properties are handled within the tax code. So that's not necessarily a confusing issue, but it's something that not everybody knows about. So Councilwoman, the chair wanted to make sure that we got this public and got this in front of the council before the legislature met during the next session.
All right. And then starting at 4:10, you've got a 30-minute presentation by the Park City Board of Education regarding the school district bond. Is the district seeking input from the council or an endorsement? Or
I don't, the council probably will not weigh in as far as an opinion as a council on that. But again, we've seen a lot of talk about the bond issue within Park City. The county residents that are in the school district haven't had as much exposure to it from the county level, so we were just allowing the school board to come in and bring some exposure to it to the county residents.
All right, and then really the bulk of the meeting starting at 4:40. This is you'll be presenting the 2016 budget?
Yes, my first manager's recommendation for the budget. Interestingly enough, the overall budget will go up a little bit, about 6 to 7%. But if you take capital out, it actually goes down by about 0.6%. So in a fairly stable budget on the operations side, few new positions involved that center around public safety, environmental quality, especially water quality, and then public works to kind of follow the strategic priorities of the board.
Yeah, you've listed about six. Are those all full-time positions?
Those are all full-time positions. That's correct.
All right. And that brings you back to what? Back to our levels of...
No, well, if you look at the totals that we've included in the packet, public safety is actually up slightly. But, you know, generally in that area back to where we were pre-recession, public works is up a little bit to react to some of the priorities of the council. And then... One of the focuses that we have gotten quite strong into is stormwater regulation and some of the issues related to septic systems and sewer. So that environmental quality area has been enhanced.
All right. So, I mean, that's actually the biggest staff ever.
It is. Well, I don't really know that for sure. I did ask that question from Brian Bellamy, and he's still working on those numbers. But since 2009, yes, that is the biggest number.
So is it a no tax increase budget?
Property taxes are actually going down a little bit. And that's due to a couple of reasons. First of all, assessments went up, so through stabilization, taxes go down. Also, a bond was paid off this year, so the property taxes will be adjusted for that. Sales tax collections are up slightly, so that's significant, and it shows that strength of the economy that we're seeing.
All right. So is this your recommended budget, or is it something you've put together with the budget committee?
Well, the budget committee puts together a budget that they recommend to me, and then I've met with all of my department heads and the elected officials that chose to meet with me past the budget committee's recommendations, and then I recommend a budget to the council. So this is my recommendation.
All right. So are there any departments that disagree with you?
Well, I'm sure there's always somebody that disagrees with me. But, you know, I didn't see anything really outrageous in requests this year. There were some positions that weren't granted. There were some line items within budgets that weren't granted. A lot of it has to do usually with things that are suggested within departmental budgets that either don't align with the strategic plan as well, or sometimes the department in creation of their budget thinks they're ready to do a project, but they may not be exactly. So we talk about those things and we adjust the budget to go into the manager's recommendation.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the capital projects. In facilities, you've got almost $10 million worth of projects. Half of that is for the new library health center and DMV center in Camas.
That's correct. So in the 2015 budget, as we started working on that, we had a little over $3 million budgeted for that project. As we got into it with the library board and looking at the facility we have out there right now and in discussions with council, they wanted to enhance that project a little bit in order to make it a better facility for the east side of the county. So we've increased that budget, and we're down to the point where we're ready to get into design. But we need to get this budget passed in order to get to that point. We can go into design right now, and we will. But we want to make sure that the council is comfortable with these numbers before we go there.
So is that kind of a total price though, $5.1 million, or does that says just first phase? I mean, do we have more?
Yeah, I think the first phase moniker got past my editing this week. That's total build.
All right. Also, $2.4 million being set aside for new fairground development. We don't even have property yet, or is that for property?
Yeah,
purchase?
That includes the property purchase, which is going to be a significant portion of that. And then as part of our due diligence, of course, we got to get past the conditional use process on any property that we buy. So we've included some money in the budget in order to get into design and have the right documents and plans ready to get through conditional use processes.
So it sounds like you've got your eye on some property, knowing what it's going to cost.
I think that's a fair bet. And I think the council is getting close to moving forward on that.
All right. Do you have that in closed session at all, or you're going to be talking about?
We have talked about that in closed session. I don't think we're talking about it this week necessarily. I can't quite remember.
There's property acquisition on the closed session agenda. Maybe.
Well, the property acquisition could be open space. It could be that. I can't remember specifically.
Also, $2 million set aside for a solar initiative. That's a pretty hefty sum.
Yeah, so we've got this idea that is brewing. As we release the QECB bonds for BeWise Energize, since we decided not to use those for that project, we have the possibility of using that same bond source to put solar on the rest of our facilities. So we've included some money in Lisa's in her operations budget to do a study to see if the savings that we would realize from putting solar on our building, the rest of our buildings, could pay a bond in order to use that source. And then we'd be able to get solar on the rest of our facilities.
Like countywide?
Countywide. So right now we've got Justice Center, we've got the Health Department. I think that's the extent of it right now. We've got a large roof line in our public works facility. We could look at some ground-based solar if that's available. Also our animal services and some other facilities that we could look at. Not sure if we'd look at the Richens building, but we're going to look at all of our facilities and their feasibility.
Yeah. So have you started to see any reductions, though, in the power bill as a result of this, or you just haven't had it on long enough?
Yes. Lisa has put together those numbers. I should get her on in the next few weeks to talk about that, because she has some good data that shows that we are really realizing savings from our energy savings initiatives.
Great. And then another $4.2 million being spent on, just road work and such. Like $1.7 million in the Silver Creek area. I thought Silver Creek did their own roads.
Well, the service area and the municipal service fund contributes to the capital plan. So that's where that a lot of the source for the road projects comes from. So in a sense, yes. But this also has to do with that connection of Bittner to the Silver Creek area, which is something that the county has been working on for a while.
All right. And then in Jeremy Ranch, we have talked about putting some roundabouts in there. Is that part of this $800,000?
It is. We're starting the process with UDOT on that. We're putting some preliminary money in there to get into, I would imagine, if there's some right-of-way acquisition and some utility investigation, and perhaps getting into some preliminary design.
All right, so we shouldn't expect to see roundabouts built next summer? Or?
I wouldn't expect it next summer. I think we're planning that for 17. We're really trying to make sure that we line up that project and some projects on Kilby over the next couple of years to work well with the school district and what it's doing. Of course, that's all up in the air until the election happens, but we're trying to align our capital plans accordingly.
All right. Just wanted to ask you, get an update with regard to the whole Epic Pass sales tax issue. It sounded like that was, you just didn't have the right guy in the room.
Well, I'll
tell
you what it was. I mean, I certainly hadn't heard of it before up until that day. And so I was kind of surprised by the question. Probably should have anticipated that a little sooner. Yeah, Matt Levitt, who was the guy that sat in those meetings with Park City and the Tax Commission in Vail, was not at the end of that meeting when that question was asked. He would have been very eloquent about it if he had been there. And I think as the city has indicated, last year an agreement was struck, the Tax Commission is comfortable with the way that Vail is handling those tax collections.
All right. Anything else?
Oh, man. I'm all about budget for the next 2 days.
Okay. All right. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, it's Wellness Fight Week at the PC Mark. In the studio with details, I have Wellness Coordinator Dondi Shira-Likes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what's Wellness Fight Week all about?
All right. So we decided that it would be awesome to have a fall Wellness Week, and we thought the theme should be Fight for Your Cause. So we have different presenters every day of the week coming in to talk about different causes.
All right, so it kicked off yesterday with a blood drive, but again, you've got something every day, so what have you got planned?
Correct. So yesterday's blood drive, we had 37 check-ins, and the city donated 29 units yesterday, which is pretty awesome. They were just slammed from 12 to 4. We're also doing a sock drive. So we're collecting new socks, any size, and we have barrels at the front of the mark that you can come in, and all those socks will be donated this week and to the Road Home. So that's kicking off the fight week. So today we have the Park City Police Department and Peace House coming in at 12 to talk about domestic violence awareness. So we've asked participants and people at the mark to wear their colors this week. So today is Purple Day. And then on Wednesday, we have the Speedy Foundation coming in to talk about suicide awareness, also 12 to 1. Thursday is going to be our health awareness fair, and that's from 12 to 2, and we have a lot of fun vendors coming. So we'll have flu shots, we have BMI testing, glucose testing, glycosamine testing, Weight Watchers, and a lot of other fun vendors. And then on Friday is our Breast Cancer Awareness Day with Image Reborn.
All right. So are all of the things happening in the party room or?
Yes.
Okay.
So the health fair will be throughout the whole lobby of the mark, and everything else will be in the party room.
Okay. And again, you've got just different colors for different days, huh?
Correct. So today is purple, like I said. Tomorrow will be yellow for suicide awareness. Thursday is blue, and Friday, of course, is pink for breast cancer awareness.
Okay. All of the events are free. People just need to show up.
They just need to show up. Everything starts at noon every day of the week, so there's no confusion there. And we look forward to having a lot of people come in and support your cause and your colors.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up next week, you've got a home composting workshop.
Yeah, so Recycle Utah is coming back, and we are inviting the community to a free home composting workshop with them from 6 to 7 p.m. next Wednesday, October 21st.
All right, just show up. It's free?
Just show up. It's free.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it, Leslie. Thank you, and hopefully we'll see people today.
All right, Dondi, thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Well, nationally recognized recruiting expert Paul Putnam will be in Park City next Monday to deliver his seminar, College Recruiting 101, College Recruiting Simplified. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So it's happening Monday, October 19th, 6:30 p.m. at the Park City High School Lecture Hall. So who should be there?
Well, any athlete who's in high school who has any kind of desire, aspiration, or thought that they would like to play sports at the collegiate level, whether it be Division I all the way to junior college. So, and these are really the youngsters that probably, I would say, starting around the 8th or 9th grade. So, and their parents, of course. So we want everybody in your community to attend, even though it's a Park City, it's opened up to every high school in the area. So I think you got Summit County and Wasatch and a few of those other schools that we'd like to invite their parents and athletes to really come out and attend and get educated on how this process starts and how they might be able to get opportunities to play in high or play in college.
Yeah, so it's free, right?
It's absolutely a free seminar, and it's full of education. And a lot of parents don't show up and families because they think that the recruiting process will start their junior or senior year. And you know, we've already had some youngsters across the country who've received offers to play sports in college. They received them in the 8th grade. So, we want to make sure it's a free event. Come get educated and just help your athletes along. It's an hour out of their time that's going to be well worth it.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you what, the Jerry Maguire of high school sports?
Well, I don't know if I'm the Jerry Maguire, but I will tell you my story is very similar in a sense that you kind of take some lemons and turn it into lemonade. My son was a highly touted recruit coming out of the area locally as well as some schools across the country. He graduated with a 3.3 GPA, but even with that, he came out of high school as a non-qualifier academically to play sports because these athletes have to have a total of 16 core credits in order to play NCAA sports, and they have to be registered with the Eligibility Center to do that. And so, if they have poor grades, maybe in the 9th grade, but kick it in gear and get straight A's the rest of the way through, that 9th grade score could possibly cost them an opportunity to play at the next level. So my son ended up going to a junior college. We finally did get him to a 4-year school, but I took that kind of experience of going through the recruiting process old school and not knowing the new ways of college recruiting. And I kind of put it out to my mission to go out and educate the community the best that I could. It now has taken me all over the country, and I do webinars that also include a lot of other countries that attend my webinars monthly as well. So,
all right. Well, so with kids in eighth grade being recruited, I mean, how is it that college coaches are finding out who they are?
Well, you know what? Every sport in college has a third-party resource that they'll use. These three-party resources will gather data and information, profiles, evaluate the athletes, and they'll put it out there in a source that college coaches can basically search the data. So, of course, the Internet's really changed the platform on how college coaches recruit. So 95% of it now for discovery really starts online. The NCAA doesn't allow coaches to proactively search athletes and or talk to or communicate with athletes really until about their junior year in high school for most sports anyway. But the NCAA will also allow for parents and athletes to contact coaches as early as they would like or visit their campuses. As long as they're proactive and they spend their own dime to get there, it's certainly allowed. So having your presence online with a profile that college coaches can search, now they can sit at the comfort of their own office without spending any money of the university's money and travel around, and they can just basically identify athletes and see if they're going to qualify by watching video, put them on the list. Now they can go to the national tournament with a list of kids that they can actually find out that Sally's going to be on field 3 at 3 o'clock and go watch her play for a few minutes and then evaluate them live. But 95% of it's going to start online, so you want to start early and get your information online as soon as possible in a way that college coaches can find you and evaluate you online.
All right. So what do you tell athletes who are courted by more than one school? I mean, is it all about the athletics or is it the academics?
Oh, no. You know what? Less than 1% of athletes across this country will receive a full-ride athletic scholarship. 99% of the opportunities is going to be based on academics, athletics, and a combination of grants and merits. And so if it's not a headcount sport, which is really only at the D1 where the NCAA mandates those are full-ride scholarships, everywhere else the college coach has to look at the academics to determine if this kid's going to be able to receive any money at that school. So I really teach these kids to consider their GPA and their test scores as their personal bank account for college education, because a 3.7 or above GPA or even higher kind of starts above a 3.0, but I really kind of encourage academics because you need to find the fit that's going to be academically, athletically. I mean, heavens, if you can't play a sport in college because you're burned out or you suffer an injury, heaven forbid, or something happens, would you still want to attend that school? And if the answer is no, then you just picked the wrong school, because it's really about the education and getting a degree to support your family with for 40 or 50 years and not to play, your sport for 40 or 50 years, because that will come to an end at some point.
Okay. Again, you're going to be in Park City Monday, 6:30 p.m. at the high school lecture hall. You're going to leave plenty of time for questions, Q&A?
I will, and I will stay as long as it's going to take to make sure every question is answered. So it's an hour presentation. It's well worth their time to attend, start early, open up, and then, I'll stay around as long as it's going to take to answer every question from anybody one-on-one.
All right, Paul. Hey, thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Leslie, for having me on.
Well, Park City Culinary Institute debuting a new six-month culinary program that begins next year. In the studio with details, I have Institute founder Lori Moldauer. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So until now, you've just been offering two-month courses?
Yes, and this is still a two-month course. What's new is that you can have it paid off 4 months later.
Okay, so how does that work?
So most culinary schools, you go to school for 6 months or 2 years, and 10 years later, you're still in debt. And so we wanted to come up with a better system. So we've partnered with a number of restaurants, both here and in Salt Lake, and they're offering a work exchange that covers 100% of tuition and just 4 months of work.
All right. So what's the cost of tuition?
It's $6,495, $6,500.
And it takes 4 months to pay it off. And basically, the restaurant that you place this person with is paying you. Paying back the tuition.
That's right. Now, and they don't have to take a job there when they're done. It's just an internship where they're going to get trained, have a mentor, go through a very specific list of skills that they're going to develop while they're doing their apprenticeship. But then they have the freedom to choose where they want to go afterwards. They don't have to go there if that's not where they want to work.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, wouldn't graduates be better off, though, just going to work? I mean, after getting out of your program? Or this kind of gives them the work history?
Well, here they're getting a mentorship. That's one advantage. And the second advantage is they're not going to be put on payroll and have to pay taxes. This is an unpaid internship, and we've checked with the Department of Labor, and they confirmed that as long as it qualifies as an unpaid internship, that the same restaurant can then still cover the tuition for the student, which actually can save anywhere from 25% to 40% of the cost for the student in not having to pay payroll taxes.
All right. So that $6,500 tuition, it includes everything, the course information, uniform, shoes, knives, or is it just the course instruction?
That's just the course instruction. Mm-hmm. The knives are $350. The uniform is $195. And then there's a family meal where the class gets together every day and makes a gourmet meal together. And that's $250 for the course of the program.
All right. So when do these programs start up?
The next one is going to take place in Salt Lake City, February 8th. And then after that, our Park City program is in April.
All right. But people should think about registering now?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, we have a lot of applications already in for the Salt Lake program. By starting in advance, they can start their internship sooner. And they can start immediately, start getting that training, and then have it under their belts a little bit before classes start so they know what they want to learn in school. It totally transforms your experience in school if you've already had a little bit of work experience and know what you're looking to learn in class.
Yeah, so, I mean, a two-month class, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, somebody going to, like, the CIA, I mean, that's like an 18-month, two-year program. I mean, how are you compressing it into 2 months?
Sure. We're covering the fundamentals. One of the things that the longer programs do, and it's a sad and unfortunate situation, is they stretch their programs out to qualify for federal funding. So not the CIA so much in particular, though they are part of that system, but up to 90% of culinary school tuition right now is being paid by federal loans. So those schools have to meet a very different customer from our student base. They have to meet a customer who's the government. And that means trying to convince the government that they're offering a valuable education. And so they might spend 3 months teaching sanitation. No one in Park City wants to spend 3 months learning sanitation. So our program is shorter because we don't teach things that people don't want to learn. We teach the fun stuff, and anything that they don't get enough experience doing hands-on in our classes, they then get to do on the job when they graduate.
Yeah. Perhaps the most important thing, though, about cooking is sanitation, though, right? I mean, you get one person sick and your career's over.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We make our students take a course with the health department, and it's $25, which is a hell of a lot better than having to go to the CIA or another school and spend $70,000 to take that same program.
Yeah. So real quick, does your program focus on cooking, baking, restaurant management, or is it, I mean, just the essentials?
It's the essentials. We throw in some fun things, too, but we do the basics of pastry and savory cooking. And then for fun, we might bring in Yu Yamamoto from Montage Deer Valley, and he might do a program on how to fillet fish and, by the way, how to work with live sea urchin when you're on vacation in Croatia. So yeah, we do a little bit of both, but we do cover the fundamentals.
All right. And for more information?
For more information, you can visit Culinary School Utah, or you can call us at 435-659-5075.
Okay. Hey, Lori, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's Lori Moldauer with the Park City Culinary Institute.